I swear to God, that'll stop your heart.
That's a lot of weight. There's over 200-300 pounders up there.
Yeah.
And he's smiling. Uh-oh. He is smiling.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Eight Rock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
You know, Brazzers, which it should be mentioned, wished me a happy birthday on Twitter last year. One of the more bizarre moments of 2016 is producing a parody porn film based on the Montreal Screwjob. And this year marks the 20-year anniversary of the Screwjob, and so Brazzers, I guess, is putting their spin on it. Romy Rain will be playing Bret Hart. I kid you not, that's her name, Romy Rain. I'm not making that up. And Mia Malkova will play the role of Shawn Michaels. Johnny Castle will play the role of Vince McMahon, who I guess gets to screw both Bret and Shawn. Not like that hasn't happened before. All I want to know is who plays the role of Earl Hebner. I don't know if they've cast Earl or not. And also, will Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler be providing the play-by-play? That's what I want to know. This is episode 484 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, February 26, 2017. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you, as always, for supporting the podcast by using our Audible link, audibletrial.com/Solid Monster. A lot of people cashing in on their free book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from. A lot of wrestling books up there as well. And I say it all the time, and people, I'll still get emails from people asking me, well, you know what? What wrestling book do you recommend? And I haven't read all of them. I've read some of them. I can't say enough good things about The Death of WCW. That's been a popular choice. I read that many years ago. And now they have the audiobook version on Audible, so you can pick that up. But they've got books for Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan's book got a lot of praise from people. And he actually narrates that himself, the audiobook version. Steve Austin, his book. He narrates his own book as well. Hulk Hogan does the same. But they've got books for Chris Jericho, Brock Lesnar, Shawn Michaels, Lex Luger, Dusty Rhodes. Bill Apter's book is Wrestling Fixed. I Didn't Know It Was Broken, which is a really good read. So there's a lot to choose from, non-wrestling books as well. You can get your copy, again, for free if you just sign up with our link for a 30-day trial of the Audible service. And if at any point you decide to cancel during those 30 days, you will not be charged. But you get to keep your book no matter what. So audibletrial.com/Solid Monster. You can become a PayPal VIP. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. You can make a donation on thesolidmonster.com. I want to give a shout out to our VIPs this week, including John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Keith the Conqueror Krajnik, Malicious Intent, Michael Cuomo, Nemesis, Nathan Moyers, Mass Grave, Micah Harshaw, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Luis Goldmine Gauthier, who runs the t-shirt website thirddaytees.com. That's the word thirddaytees.com. You can get 10% off your order of $45 or more by using the coupon code BUYMORESAVE10. The Prince of Pleasantville, Enilio Crockett, the Brisbane Bruiser, Tien Guyon. Also want to say happy birthday to the Irish Wolf, Simon Peter Munoz from Genie. And I will co-sign that. Happy birthday, brother. I'm very sorry I couldn't make it out last night. Also shout out to longtime listener Andy and his fiance Nicola on their upcoming nuptials this week. Best of luck to both of them. I always love hearing when we have listeners of the show who are getting hitched. Montesi, Antoine Moore. I told you last week he'll be performing at the WrestleCon launch party, but he'll also be performing at the Saddle Up Bar at the Hardy Boys Broken Tailgate Party on WrestleMania Sunday, April 2nd, around 12:30 p.m., I believe is when he goes live. that is presented by WWN Live and Evolve, 100 North Orange Avenue in Orlando. He'll be a busy man that weekend. I know the feeling. Shout out to the Bite That Wrestling podcast. Wade Barrett once told one of the hosts that he looked like Tyson Kidd. I don't know if that was meant as an insult or not. I would take it as a compliment. They offer a fun weekly discussion about WWE. You could check them out every Wednesday. Just search for Bite That on iTunes or go to BiteThat.com. Again, that's Bite That with a Y. So check those guys out. Some quick notes here. If there's anybody listening who knows anything about editing app files for the Google Play Store and adding privacy policies and whatnot, I'm talking about editing the actual app, not inserting a privacy policy in the actual description in the Google Play Store, but actually editing an app file, an APK file. Hit me up and let me know, because apparently I got a message in my developer console telling me that if I don't add or update a privacy policy to the app itself by the middle of March, they may take the app down. And I know there's people who actually use that app to stream the show. We do have a free, people may not even know we have a free app in the Google Play Store if you have an Android device. And so to try to avoid that, I'd like to be able to do what they have asked me to do. The problem is, I had that app created for me a number of years ago by Podbean. It's part of the package I paid for, which they don't even offer what they did for me back then. They don't even offer that anymore. And so I went back to them and said, look, I need this done. And they basically said, we can't help you. You're on your own. And I have no idea what to do. It's not like I created the app. I didn't, you know, that was their forte. And I simply just uploaded it to the store. So I really don't know what to do here. And I'd like to try to avoid the app being taken down because I do know people use it. So if there's anybody out there who thinks they might be able to help or know a thing or two about that, let me know, and I would very much appreciate that. I also want to make mention of the fact that we have our invite up on Facebook for our Orlando meetup. We are going to do a meet and greet here. Sound Off fans getting together to talk about wrestling on WrestleMania Sunday, April 2nd, 11:15 a.m. all the way to 2:30 p.m. at Tin Roof Orlando. If you think you can make it, head over to Facebook. The invite's up on our fan page. It's in the group. I posted a link on Twitter as well. I'll do the same again this week. It's actually pinned to the top of my Twitter profile right now. Click that link. It has all the details in there in terms of time, address, and if you would be so kind as to RSVP, it's not a requirement. You could just show up, but I'd like to try to get a sense of how many people to expect, so head on over there and let me know if you can make it. Hopefully I see a bunch of you guys down there. We're only about, what, five weeks away now? 4 weeks? We're only about 4 weeks away, I think. So we're getting close. I'm going to be doing a live unboxing here on the podcast a little bit later on for this month's Pro Wrestling Crate from ProWrestlingCrate.com, which is a partner of ProWrestlingTees.com, where we have our own store. You can actually get the Sound Off Orlando shirt in that store. But if you remember a few months ago, I had a chance to do a live unboxing of a crate from WrestleCrate UK, and I enjoyed it. It was just something that was brought to my attention. I said, sure, I'll give it a shot. I think it's something people might have an interest in knowing about. And I didn't know what to expect, especially, you know, this was coming from the UK. I figured it would be more UK-centric, which it was. But they had a lot of cool stuff in there, and so it only made sense to give this a try. I know a lot of you guys are into these crates, and some of you have memberships and subscriptions already. If you're curious to learn more about it and what's inside, then you're about to find out, because I'm going to be doing an unboxing here. I have it sitting right here next to me, and I figured let's just do it live on the air and see what goodies we have inside. So not only that, but I'm going to also be mentioning the exclusive code. I've had them set up a discount code for listeners of this podcast. So after I do the unboxing, if you want to get in on it, if you want to sample it, you can get 20% off your first month. So if you want to know more about that, just wait. That's coming up later on in the podcast. First things first, big congratulations to Diamond Dallas Page on his WWE Hall of Fame induction. Very well deserved. The second interview that I did with him last year won, if you remember, from Media Interview of the Year in the Wrestling Radio Awards. But that first conversation that we had, which was a little over a year ago, I don't think people realize how sick he was at the time. Well, I mean, if you remember it, you probably do because he sounded awful. I just remember I put that interview up on our YouTube channel, and I remember there was a comment in there. Somebody wrote, "Don't die, Dally. Please don't die." It was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. But he really, you know, he sounded like he was near death, but he really wanted to do it. This was when I was doing the WCW Greatest Matches countdown here for those 15 weeks on the podcast. I really wanted him on to talk about the Goldberg match at Halloween Havoc in 98, which is still to this day Goldberg's greatest match. Kevin Owens, I think, has his work cut out for him to try to beat that match at Fastlane. But we were only supposed to go about 15, 20 minutes. Again, just talking about the match. He wasn't feeling great. He gave me 40. And actually, I felt like he was starting to feel and sound better as time went on. He gave me 40 minutes. And, you know, listening to him talk about the little intricacies of that match and what went into it. And then he just launched into some Randy Savage stories and what it was like working with him. It's maybe my favorite interview of all the ones that I've done. Either that or the Bob Holly one I did. It's kind of hard to choose, but I'll never forget him doing that for me when really he had no business doing it. If he does something like that for me, you know, you kind of say to yourself, imagine what this guy will do for other people or people that, you know, he's actually close to. And what he's done is he's helping out a whole lot of people, not the least of which are Jake Roberts and Scott Hall. By now, everybody knows the story there, but you know, he helped them turn their lives around. And on top of that, he was one of the two true stars that WCW created during the Monday Night War period. Him and Goldberg. And DDP was over, man. I'm telling you. I mean, and it's still, to this day, it boggles my mind how he was wasted when he came over to WWE. You know, one of the two guys who actually gave up more money than you can imagine, okay? We're talking six figures here of guaranteed money to come work for WWE. And, you know, I always talk about how WWE should have pushed harder for some of those guys like Sting and Goldberg and Hogan to come in earlier than they did with Bischoff and do a proper invasion angle in 2001 instead of, you know, whatever the hell it was that they did. It would have been huge. I mean, it would have been much bigger than what they did. But, you know, maybe those guys that were kind of sitting on the side doing their own thing, maybe they had the right idea, okay? Because besides the guaranteed money, I mean, I know why they didn't do it. Even though I still think had they come in earlier, they would have made that money back fivefold in the long run. But I could see why they would have been hesitant to come in. DDP is a perfect example of that. I mean, Booker T at least had more luck than DDP did. But you know what? Despite the crappy stuff they did with him, they gave him that self-help gimmick. He made it work. He actually made it work. And to this day, people still use that, oh, that's not a bad thing, that's a good thing line. Even after all these years, people still remember that. I don't know who he wants to induct him or who they want to induct him. It may not be his call. I think Jake and Scott together on stage would certainly make sense to have them both do it. I know Dusty Rhodes, you know, he was telling me he was a big influence on his career, and unfortunately he's no longer here. Randy Savage was another big influence on his career, and he's not around. I was thinking, you know, maybe even someone like Arthur. Maybe he gets Arthur to do it. I mean, Arthur is the veteran who was all crippled up and couldn't even walk on his own when he started doing DDP yoga, and now he's like a new man. I mean, I'm sure there's no shortage of people who would love to volunteer to be the one to go up there and induct him. But either way, I'm very happy that I decided to get my Hall of Fame ticket this year. I skipped out on the Hall of Fame last year. A bunch of us skipped out on the Hall of Fame last year. I just was like, I was just over it. It's just to be there live in the building sometimes can get very, very boring. And once I saw Kurt Angle was going in this year, I wanted to be there. And I'm glad because now, you know, DDP, it's official, he's going in, and I'm very happy that I'll be there for that. I only wish they would play him out to the Smells Like Teen Spirit knockoff, but I guess that would be asking too much. Now, I'm going to be doing Fastlane predictions on this show. Normally, I wait until the day of, the weekend of, and sometimes I know people aren't able to listen to it in time. The card is pretty much set. It may evolve. They probably will add another match or two this week. I'm going to do my predictions this week anyway. I'll do them after the Raw review. Now, I do reserve the right to change my mind if something big happens on the Go Home show tomorrow night. That's the other reason why usually I wait, because you got one more Raw and anything can happen. But I think I've got my predictions pretty well locked down at this point, so I will do those after this. Monday Night Raw was live from Los Angeles this past Monday night, a night where both Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock were both in the same building and never once appeared on television. Raw Twitter poll, almost 2,000 of you voted, 55% thumbs up, 45% thumbs down. Another thumbs up show overall. I will say that, you know, I love the Kevin Owens promo. They opened the show with a Kevin Owens promo, him sitting in a chair in the ring, looking dead into the camera. I know some of you tweeted me, oh, I bet Solomonster loves that. Well, I did. We don't see that very often. So I loved that promo. Very much reminded me of the Eddie Guerrero heel promo from SmackDown many years ago. He talked about his match with Goldberg at Fastlane. He admitted, and this is true, that the longer the match goes on, the more advantage goes to Goldberg's opponent. Because basically what he's saying is Goldberg will blow up in 5 minutes. So I fully expect that when the bell rings at Fastlane, Owens is going to take a powder out of the ring and just stall as long as possible. That thing is going longer than a minute 26. I think the only question is by how much. I don't think it's going over by that much more. I don't think we're getting a 10-minute match here. And I really don't think we should, but I think it will be longer than the match we saw at Survivor Series. He said the reason Goldberg came back was to prove to his wife and to his son and to all the little kids out there that superheroes do exist.
And his name is John C.
I had to. I'm sorry. I know. Rest in peace, headphone users. I know. I'm sorry. I swear that will never get old. Super Cena aside, Owens said that he's going to prove to Goldberg that superheroes do not exist. And when he went to address what he did to his now former best friend Chris Jericho the week before, he dropped the mic and he left. Very, very good stuff here from Kevin Owens. I'm only sorry that we didn't get to see more of this Kevin Owens before they get that belt off him next weekend. Enzo and Cass beat Sheamus and Cesaro to become number one contenders for the tag team titles at Fastlane. After the match, Enzo got back on the mic and he mocked them for losing. He told the Swiss Superman that we got that kryptonite. And he kept repeating that over and over and over again until Sheamus bro-kicked the hell out of him. Kicked him so hard, Sheamus fell over. Enzo was so annoying here. Sheamus, of all people, got a thank you chant from the crowd. A thank you Sheamus chant for laying out Enzo Amore. I was thanking him by the time this was over. So annoying. Owens went to leave the building. Mick Foley stopped him and said, hey, I booked you in a match against Sami Zayn. You're not going anywhere. We also learned that the New Day will be the official hosts of WrestleMania this year. So I guess that means no match for the longest reigning tag team champions in history. I saw someone, I think it was in our Facebook group, who floated, I'm assuming jokingly, the idea that they could set up the return of Hulk Hogan, have him come out and do something with New Day. It's possible. Look, I predicted at the beginning of the year when I did the prediction show, I said Hulk Hogan will be back, which I'm sure a lot of people figure Hogan's going to be back, but I said he will be back at WrestleMania. They're not going to spoil it. They're going to have it as a surprise because it's 30 years. It's 30 years since he slammed Andre at WrestleMania 3. How do you not have Hogan on that show? So I figure, you know, they'll hit Real American. He'll make the big comeback. I'm sure he'll get a very nice reaction. But what do you do with him, right? He can come out and pose and then leave. Could they do something with him in New Day? Yeah, maybe. Maybe. But, I'm actually thinking about this. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, let's say New Day doesn't have a match and they're going to do some big skit or segment with them in front of the crowd. Maybe, hey, you never know, right? Maybe we get a Broken Hardys New Day comedy segment. Would not be a bad place for the Hardys to make a surprise return and start a program, even, with the New Day. New Day needs something to do. Unless they're breaking these guys up or they're doing something. The New Day, I mean, people still like them. I'm sure they still move a lot of booty-os and a lot of t-shirts and all that kind of stuff. And so long as they do that, they're not going to split them up. But they're just kind of floating around. They have nothing to do. They're just wandering around aimlessly right now with no real direction. And I think if the Hardys do come over, and there's been a lot of talk, I mean, look, they still haven't signed new contracts apparently with TNA. So technically they're free agents right now, or at least Matt is. Now I did see that Matt Hardy has his own personal store on his website, and I saw that his wife made the announcement that it's shutting down. I wouldn't read too much into that. I think she even posted on her Twitter page an explanation for that. I think she's pregnant with their second child. And they fill all those orders themselves. They hand do the orders and they mail them out and all that kind of stuff. And I guess it's just becoming too much for her. So I would not look at that as, oh, it's evidence that he's coming to WWE. I don't think that has anything to do with anything. But could they end up in WWE by or before WrestleMania? Yeah, I think they can. And I think setting something up, again, having them come out as a surprise and setting something up between them and New Day at WrestleMania would not be a bad idea at all. They had a very nice video tribute to George the Animal Steel. Only a graphic later in the show for Ivan Koloff. But at least they acknowledged him. Nothing at all for Nicole Bass, but I didn't expect anything because she was only there for, what, 5 months? We had a Bayley promo on this show where she came out and she talked about all of her hard work finally paying off and becoming the new Raw Women's Champion, and she pointed out her dad in the crowd, although they never showed him. She just mentioned that he was in the crowd. Unless I missed something, they never put him on camera. Stephanie came out. Basically, this was all just a setup for Stephanie to say, well, you did have an assist from Sasha Banks in that match against Charlotte last week. And if you really are a role model for kids, and if you are the fine, upstanding citizen you are, blah, 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 you will surrender the Raw Women's Championship. And this brought out the boss. Out comes Sasha Banks, and she says, listen to the WWE Universe. You know, don't do it. Don't do it. Trying to convince Bayley not to give up the belt. And of course, Bayley teased doing just that, and she milked it and milked it and milked it. I don't want to set a bad example for the kids and all that sort of thing. And she basically gave every legitimate reason why she probably should surrender the championship before the big swerve came. And she said, no way am I giving up this championship. So Charlotte came out. This all led to a rematch. I say a rematch. One of the many, many, many rematches that Charlotte has had with Sasha. Because Charlotte's already getting her title rematch against Bayley at Fastlane. So they had a Sasha Banks-Charlotte match here on this show. A rekindled rivalry. And I could have sworn that we were told that this feud was over 2 months ago. But I guess now they've gone back to it. And so they were having a good match. You know, Bayley was out there on commentary. All of a sudden, Dana Brooke runs down, more like jogged down to the ring, a leisurely jog down to ringside. This was hilarious. So I said, Bayley's on commentary. Bayley sees Dana coming out, so she throws her headset down. She goes and runs after her. Dana never even got, just as she was getting to ringside, she never even got to Sasha. As she's getting down to the ringside area, Bayley comes up from behind her and just nails her. She waffles Dana from behind. Dana takes a pratfall right down flat on her face. Funniest thing on the entire show. The sight of Dana Brooke casually jogging to the ring and then falling flat on her face. I hope they add that to the signature at the start of the show. This distracted Charlotte. Sasha hit the bank statement and got Charlotte to tap out. So between Charlotte tapping out here clean to Sasha, well, kind of clean to Sasha, and this whole pay-per-view streak, she's undefeated in title matches on pay-per-view. It's very obvious that they're putting the belt back on her next Sunday. I mean, I said that the moment that Bayley won the championship, and now it's even more obvious. Sami Zayn was on his way out for his match with Kevin Owens when Samoa Joe attacked from behind, threw him into the post, threw him into the ring. Wasn't really much of a match at that point. Kevin Owens hit a couple of cannonballs in the corner, and then he hit a wicked pop-up powerbomb for the win. Backstage, Stephanie confronted Mick Foley about where the hell he was during that Bayley-Sasha-Charlotte segment earlier, and Mick said, well, I did consider going out there in support of Bayley. And Stephanie brought up Mick's behavior during the Samoa Joe contract signing. If you remember that a few weeks ago, Mick was very much, he had a big puss on his face during that whole segment, and she said that his behavior there bordered on insubordination. And Foley then reached into his fanny pack and pulled out his testicles and actually cut a promo on Stephanie. He said that, I know I'm probably, you know, committing career suicide here, but I'm not going to risk my credibility just to justify or satisfy your appetite for greed. And Stephanie told Mick, you better watch yourself. There's a wire. There's a cord on the floor. I wouldn't want you to trip and have an accident. Uh-oh. Paging Kurt Angle. Get ready. It's coming. Michael Cole did a sit-down interview backstage with Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar. Actually, Heyman did all the talking. Brock Lesnar, he took the chair or the stool or whatever it was. He propped it up right in front of the camera. He literally sat down and stared into the camera through all of our souls. And seriously, if you go back and watch this entire segment with the sound on mute, it's the most unnerving 5 minutes of television you'll ever see. It's just Brock Lesnar staring at you, which is pretty scary. Heyman said Kevin Owens has a chance to go into WrestleMania as the Universal Champion, but Brock Lesnar disagrees. He says if Goldberg hits one spear and one jackhammer at Fastlane, he goes to WrestleMania as the Universal Champion. And if that happens, it's just one more thing for Brock Lesnar to take away from him. I assume Goldberg's life being the other thing. The main event on this show, I kid you not, the main event of Monday Night Raw was Braun Strowman against The Big Show. Now, ordinarily, if I were to sit here and say that after 3 hours, the main event on a Monday Night Raw was Braun Strowman against The Big Show, or really Big Show against almost anybody, that would be a thumbs down episode of Raw. But you would be wrong if you said that about this. Now, I thought for sure there was a reason behind this. I thought there's no way. There's just no way they're doing just a straight up Braun Strowman Big Show match here to end the show and that's it. I figured they were setting up a big angle. They're in LA. They're going to have Shaq come out. All we've heard about ever since, what was it, the ESPY Awards a few months ago is that Shaq and Big Show is going to happen at WrestleMania. Big Show's been posting videos on Twitter of him training and getting into the best shape of his life and telling Shaq, I hope you're ready. And so I figured, all right, we're getting pretty close to WrestleMania here. They got to shoot some kind of an angle to get this thing going. And so this is the perfect place for it. And that did not happen. No Shaq. Instead, it was just a straight-up wrestling match with Strowman going over. These guys, and by the way, the Shaq-Big Show thing, it sounds like it might not even be happening now. Big Show, I think they did some kind of interview with him on WWE.com. And I don't know if it's just a case of they're still trying to convince him to do it. I don't know. It's very weird. I don't know that they have anything set up. I don't think they have anything really already agreed upon. I think they kind of were hoping it would happen. And maybe Shaq gave them indications that he would agree to do it. And maybe now he's backing out, or maybe he never really took it that seriously. I mean, it'd be kind of shitty for Big Show if you think about it. He's been training his ass off and talking about, like, he's looking at this as his last big WrestleMania match. Maybe his last WrestleMania match. And if Shaq just says, I'm not really interested, I was just kidding, that's kind of crappy. I'm not saying it would be a good match, but I kind of feel bad for Big Show if that happens. So I don't know what's going on there, but they had this match. This match got a "This is awesome" chant at the very beginning. Then they exchanged holds. Then Strowman started doing rolls. He executed a kip up right in the middle of the ring. That was shocking. I've seen grainy video of him doing this at a house show once against Big Show, but I just did not see that coming. So the crowd reacted very big to that. These two guys had a good match. It really was. They had a good match. The crowd was into it. They didn't shit all over it. Big Show ended up putting Strowman up on the ropes in the corner. So between him doing this all of these mentions throughout the entire night, they've reinforced the ring. They've had to reinforce the ring. These two giants are going to be in there. They've had to reinforce the ring because of the massive size of these men, I guess. Forgetting the fact that we have about a dozen or more people in the ring at once every year in the Royal Rumble. And they have battle royals every other week on SmackDown lately, it seems. Forget that. Forget that little fact. I thought they were going to recreate the ring collapse spot. Now, I forgot that The Rock was there. He was actually waiting to come out to film some scenes for a movie. So it really wouldn't have made sense for them to break the ring if Rock was coming right out to film scenes for a movie. But they didn't do it. There was no ring break. They teased the superplex spot, but they never went through with it. Instead, Strowman came off the second rope and Show KO'd him with a punch for a near fall. They botched up the finish a little bit. The crowd didn't really give him any crap for it. Strowman, he had a lot of trouble getting Big Show up on his shoulders for the running power slam. Almost dropped him. He did deliver the move. It looked terrible. Big Show had enough sense, I'm assuming, to kick out of it. And they did it again. And this time Strowman got him up. He made the power slam look a little bit better. He still had some trouble holding him up there, though. And it's funny to me because Big Show has got to be at the lightest weight of his entire career, probably even including his WCW run. And he looked pretty svelte, if you go back and look at him in WCW. He has got to be in the best shape of his career right now, at least weight-wise. He's got to be in the best shape of his career. I think he's down to about 396. And so for Strowman, now look, I'm not saying that he's still not a big guy. I mean, I sure as hell couldn't pick him up. I mean, you could give me the strength of 10 men compared to what I already have, and I still wouldn't be able to pick that guy up. But it's funny to me that, you know, maybe I'm just so used to seeing John Cena lifting Big Show up on his shoulders for the attitude adjustment that when I see somebody struggle, it's kind of weird to me. But, you know, then again, even Brock Lesnar had a match with Big Show. It was on the network on some kind of network special last year, I think, right? Or the year before. And he dropped him. He had him up for the F5, and even Brock dropped him. So, it happens. But as soon as the ref counted three and Strowman won, Roman Reigns' music hit. Out he came to attack Strowman. He landed two Superman punches. He went for the spear, but Strowman nailed him with a drop kick and then hit the running power slam and left him laying as they went off the air. I still can't believe they gave those two guys that long of a match. They gave those guys in excess of 10 minutes, which is a long time for a Big Show Braun Strowman match. But I'll be damned if they didn't impress me in there. That was a fun main event to watch. That really was. So, after the show went off the air, The Rock, I mentioned, he was there. He had come out before the show to let everybody know, hey, I'm not going to be on Raw, because this is a terrible show and I want to have nothing to do with it. No, he didn't say that, but he said, I'm going to be coming out later. We're going to be filming scenes for my new movie that he's... What is he? Is he a producer? I think he has a cameo in the movie, and his production company maybe is producing it. It's the Fighting With My Family movie, basically on Paige's family. They were filming the last scene in the movie, which is the night after WrestleMania 30, when Paige made her main roster debut, and she beat AJ Lee to win the Divas Championship. So that was the scene they were going to be recreating. And this was... Basically, this was Bizarro Paige against Bizarro AJ, because they have neither Paige nor AJ Lee playing themselves in this movie. Thea Trinidad, the former Rosita from TNA and current Mrs. Austin Aries. Well, they're not married, but I don't know what the other term to use would be. But they're together. And so she's playing AJ Lee. And the woman playing Paige is some kind of actress I've never heard of before. And they came out, they had them do, I think, multiple takes, and I know some of you guys were in the building tweeting me notes from the show. They basically shot the entrances, and they played AJ Lee's music, and out she came, and they did the match, and I guess, I don't know when the movie comes out, but I guess when it does, we'll see how it compares to the real thing. But the bigger story of all this is that Rock is out there, they're getting things set up, it's already late. It's not as late as it would be if they were out on the East Coast. I mean, they're in LA, so when the show ends there, it's what? 8 o'clock. Okay, that's you know, oh, poor West Coast people, it's 8 p.m. So they're out there and they're setting up, and Rock is trying to kill, you know, some time and get the people to chant certain things. He wants them to boo, he wants them to cheer, a loud cheer, a medium cheer. Here a cheer, there a cheer, everywhere a cheer. And he mentions AJ Lee, and people start chanting CM Punk. Because that's what they do. And Rock told some jokes and tried to get the people to boo. He's like, you know, pretend John Cena's in the movie and pretend Roman Reigns is coming out here. He was throwing his cousin under the bus to get them to boo. But when people started chanting CM Punk, they wouldn't shut up. And so Rock pulled out his phone. He goes, you know what, I'm going to try to call Punk right now. And I'm sure Vince McMahon is in the back having a coronary, clutching his chest. And Rock calls CM Punk, and Punk doesn't answer because apparently he was out walking his dog. Didn't get the call. So he left him a voicemail. Well, I guess Punk tried to call him back. He tried to call him back. He tried to FaceTime him. How, that would have been something. Had that call gone through, that would have been something. But I guess the Wi-Fi in the building was so shitty that the call, he couldn't get the call to go through, and so it never happened. But apparently WWE people in the back were freaking out. They were not happy at all that Rock would even bring up Punk, let alone call him in the middle of the ring. They still have that lawsuit against Punk. They're making his life a living hell. Punk, of course, has no love lost for WWE. It's still a mess. And Rock is probably the only person in the world who could get away with doing what he... I mean, what are they going to do to him? You know what I mean? Like, is Vince going to march down to the ring and say, Rock, how dare you? Stop doing that. Arr. You're like, what's he going to... He's not going to do a thing. They sent somebody down, I guess, to tell him, hey, cut it out. And Rock probably just told him to piss off. Because he knows, like, what are they going to do to me? They're not going to do anything. I'm working on their movie. They need me a lot more than I need them, which is true, by the way. Rock doesn't need WWE at all. So I thought that was kind of funny that, I wish there was a camera. I wish that there was a camera fixed in the back and there was a live feed broadcasting from the gorilla position of what their reactions were when he pulled that phone out and called Punk. Good. Good. I hope he made them sweat a little bit. WWE Fastlane. Let's talk about Fastlane here. Fastlane is coming up next Sunday from the Bradley Center in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The very same building where the Mega Powers exploded back in 1989. I believe that was the very first WWE show in that building. It was a relatively brand new building. Elizabeth took a bump. That was during the Mega Powers Twin Towers match where they eerily talked about knocking down the Twin Towers. Elizabeth took a bump. Hogan deserted his partner and carried his partner's wife to the back to get medical attention. And also, Hogan got caught that night on live TV asking for a countdown when they were coming back from a commercial break. That's kind of funny. And I guess that's, I like to think that's why Randy Savage ended up kicking his ass, because he was caught breaking kayfabe and counting, give me a countdown or something, I think is what he said. And Randy Savage said he's got to protect the business, and he kicked Hogan's ass. But I still think it's funny that Hogan went on a rampage in the back when this whole angle was over that night. Savage beat him up. And Hogan just went nuts, and he goes on this rampage in the locker room, and the two guys that he grabbed and physically assaulted in the hallway, and this was in 1989, mind you, the two guys were Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. I'm amused by that. I'm like, what are the chances? These two random guys who were in tag teams at the time, and, you know, Hogan grabs the two of them. I think there's like a metaphor in there somewhere. You can find that show on the network, by the way. I don't think there'll be anything as memorable as that Mega Powers angle on this show coming up next weekend. At least nothing that we're going to be talking about 30 years from now. But let's run down the card as it now stands. Again, they will probably be adding a match or two this week. I can always update my predictions on the podcast next week if need be. We have Neville and Jack Gallagher for the Cruiserweight Championship. I like Gallagher. I think he's one of the more entertaining parts of Raw every week. But there's no way Neville is losing that title right now. Nor should he. I think it would be a big mistake to take the belt off him. He's doing a great job in the role. He is the king of the cruiserweights. And I think he's doing a bang-up job with it. And I think this heel turn has breathed new life into the man. So I say Neville retains. And then goes on to WrestleMania to defend against Austin Aries, perhaps. Although I could see a multi-man match. Enzo Amore and Big Cass against Anderson and Gallows for the Raw Tag Team Championship. Yeah, it's weird. Every time Enzo and Cass have had an opportunity at the tag team titles, be it on the main roster or even in NXT, and there were two or three times at least in NXT where I thought, okay, finally, right? They're going to pull the trigger. They were in Brooklyn for that first takeover show, and they never won the big one. They have never been tag team champions. They always fall short. And I think they finally do it at WrestleMania. I don't think they do it here. I think they'll find a way to lose again. Probably due to some kind of, probably due to Enzo, really. I say Anderson and Gallows retain, probably aided by some interference by Sheamus and Cesaro. It definitely feels like they're setting up a three or four way match for the belts at WrestleMania. They have not officially added this yet, although I suspect by tomorrow night they will. Samoa Joe against Sami Zayn. Joe should win. Joe should absolutely win this match, unless, Unless the plan is for them to have a rematch at WrestleMania. And I don't know if it is or not. I like that idea because it gives Sammy something to do, and I guess it gives Joe something to do also, other than just standing in Triple H's corner, which he could still do. You could do a non-finish here in this match. Maybe they have a wild brawl all over the building and they get counted out. Whatever, however you want to do it, but do some sort of finish like that. That way it sets up a rematch for WrestleMania, and then Joe wins that match. In the end, Joe has to win. But that way you can extend it and give these two guys something to do. Because otherwise, I imagine Sammy will just end up in the Battle Royal, and Joe, I don't know what Joe will do. I mean, if Rollins is going to be ready to go, it's obviously going to be him and Triple H, and then Joe could run in, or Joe could be the bodyguard in the corner. I'd like to see him doing more than that at his first WrestleMania. That's why I like the idea of maybe extending this out another 4 weeks. But that, to me, is the only acceptable alternative finish to Joe just straight up demolishing this guy and winning the match. I think that might be where they go with this. So non-finish leading to a rematch at WrestleMania is my call. I wish it was Joe and Rollins at WrestleMania and not Rollins and Triple H. So that way you have Joe beat Sammy here and then they can build to that match. Especially now with the injury, right? You've got the built-in story. This guy injured me. I want my revenge. But, you know, hey, Triple H, he has to have his token match on the card, and so it is what it is. But let's see what happens on the go-home show tomorrow, because they are hyping Seth Rollins is going to be on the show. I don't know if it's via satellite or in person, but he'll be on the show, and I guess we'll find out more about his condition at that point. Bayley and Charlotte for the Raw Women's Championship. They built this stupid streak up so much for so long now. Just to blow it off on the frickin' Fastlane card is pretty dumb. And I suspect that will not happen. They may as well at this point just have her take her first pay-per-view loss to WrestleMania. That's the place to do it, not Fastlane. And what that means then is, surprise, surprise, Bayley loses the championship 2 weeks after winning it. And Charlotte becomes, I believe, a 5-time women's champion in doing so. Doing that title change on Raw was so dumb. It was a good match, but like I said when it happened, so stupid and so short-sighted. But I have to think that Charlotte wins it back here, and then Bayley wins it back at WrestleMania in a 3-way with Sasha or a 4-way with Nia Jax. Roman Reigns against Braun Strowman. They've done such a good job building up Braun and making me care about this guy. You know, the Wyatt family, he was just another big guy with a beard. Didn't really see anything special about him. He always had the size, but it was like, eh, okay. And they broke him away from the Wyatt family. And my first thought probably, I don't remember exactly what my first thought was. I probably wasn't paying too much attention to what they were doing with Braun Strowman, to be honest with you. But I would imagine my first reaction was, ooh, that's not going to be good for him. But they've stuck with him. They have stuck with him. And this is a great example of what happens when they really do things the right way. And it's paying off for them right now because people, I mean, for God's sakes, Braun Strowman had a match with Big Show in the main event of Raw in front of a Los Angeles crowd. And that not only did they not crap on it, they gave them a "This is awesome" chant. Felt like I was living in some kind of alternate dimension. So obviously they're doing something right with this guy. And I half expect them here to have Roman hit him with 3 spears and just pin him. Now, I'm hoping instead Undertaker's gong goes off. His gong, not his dong. Thank you to everybody who corrected me after the last time. I don't want to see or hear Undertaker's dong. I don't even want to see that match at WrestleMania. I've made my thoughts on that pretty clear, but it's happening, and so we just have to hope for the best with Undertaker and Reigns. And so if that is the plan, then I say let Undertaker interfere for the DQ and lay out Roman with a tombstone. That way Braun is spared a pinfall loss. He can lose by DQ. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. The bigger question I have is, what are they doing with Braun Strowman at WrestleMania? Do you have him win the Andre Battle Royal? I would think so. I would think that's what you do with him. I'm predicting Strowman and Lesnar at SummerSlam, whether it's for the championship or not. I made that prediction at the beginning of the year. I'm going to stick with that. So I like the idea. If, let's say, Brock wins the championship, okay, let's chart this out here. I like the idea that the person who wins the Battle Royal actually goes on to bigger things instead of it just being a meaningless battle royal. We've seen quite a few of those recently, mostly on SmackDown. Not all meaningless, but just a lot of battle royals. In fact, we had one just this week, which was not insignificant. It did have a purpose and a meaning, but we had yet another battle royal this week. I would say if Shaq pulls out of his match with Big Show, I almost would not mind seeing him and Strowman again at WrestleMania after the match they had on Raw, but I feel like they can't, how could they top that? Like, they had a match, it was better than anybody expected, it was better than it had any right to be. What more could they possibly do? You know? Why tempt fate? What could they possibly do in that match that would be better than what we saw them do this week? I don't need to see Braun Strowman doing a tope out of the ring. So I would think that the Andre Battle Royal and a big win there probably is what makes the most sense. And finally, the main event. Kevin Owens defending the WWE Universal title against Bill Goldberg. I said a few weeks ago that if Goldberg and Brock is the main event for WrestleMania, then it should be for the championship. I still feel that way. And on Raw, Paul Heyman made it very clear that when Brock beats Goldberg at WrestleMania, after Fastlane, he'll get to beat him for the championship. It makes little sense for Brock to screw himself out of a championship match for a title he never was actually pinned for, and a title that he should theoretically want to get back. So I say, how's this for an idea? There's a ref bump in this match. Brock does run out. Brock does run out to interfere. Maybe he lays out Goldberg with an F5, right? Because his rage is just consumes him. Goldberg has embarrassed him a couple of times now, and maybe against Heyman's orders or his better judgment, he runs out there, he lays out Goldberg. And now everybody's thinking, well, that's it. That's how Kevin Owens retains the championship. It's due to Brock Lesnar. Then you have Chris Jericho make his run in, and he lays out Kevin Owens and gets revenge for what Owens did to him. And that leads to the spear and the jackhammer, and Goldberg wins the title. It's just a little false finish to get the people thinking that Brock just screwed Goldberg out of the belt. But yet Goldberg in the end finds a way to win again, and Brock, of course, finally then gets the big win at WrestleMania over Goldberg. I do think he is winning the championship. Goldberg, that is. I do think he's winning the title. I think Kevin Owens was... if anything, he was a victim of the booking. Like, if you're someone who, and I found myself feeling this way, who was happy that they put the championship on Kevin Owens when Balor got hurt, they put the title on Owens. It was not something I was expecting. We all know Kevin Owens is a good wrestler. He's very good. He has good matches. And to see him have the chance to run with the championship is not something I was expecting so soon. I was happy about it. And as time went on, I found myself less and less interested. Now, is that because Kevin Owens was not as good as I thought he was? I don't think that's the case. I think Kevin Owens is really good, and I think we're starting to see that now. We're starting to see the Kevin Owens of old these last couple of weeks. As much as I enjoyed the stuff with him and Chris Jericho, the friendship stuff, and it was great. It was great. The fact is, Owens was not booked as a strong world champion. He was booked as the typical chicken shit heel for much of his run, and I only wish that we had a chance to see more of the Kevin Owens that we got the last 2 weeks. I wish we had a chance to see more of the NXT Kevin Owens. That ruthless Kevin Owens. The Kevin Owens who cut that promo on Raw. And then I might feel differently about things. I might be like, well, wait a minute now. He's done a great job, and he should definitely go into WrestleMania with the championship, and I might feel differently, but I'm pretty sure the die has already been cast for this guy, and Goldberg is getting the belt, which would be his first since 2003. He has not held the championship since then. That's almost 14 years. That's a long time. And I do think that that is the end result. I think it's the spear and the jackhammer, and we're going to have a new champion. SmackDown Live from Ontario, California. Twitter poll, over 1,800 votes. 80% thumbs up, 20% thumbs down. Shout out to 9-year-old Jordan Ricafort for his sound-off sign. Him and his dad went to SmackDown on Tuesday, and he said Jordan did not want to make any wrestler signs. He only wanted to make a sound-off sign. And apparently he had people coming up to him during the show asking about the sign, and he was my unofficial spokesman for the night. He kept telling him, oh, you can find it on your phone. So Jordan, if you're listening, thank you, buddy. I appreciate that. That was very cool. In fact, I would say that was the coolest sign anybody's ever made for the show. It really was. I put a picture of it up on Facebook and Twitter. It's a pretty cool sign. Apparently, Jordan's also a big fan of my Raw and SmackDown Instapolls. Not everyone is. There was a fair amount of hate for this show, and really, it was just based on the finish of the Battle Royal, and people hating on the fact that this show got 80% thumbs up rate in our Twitter poll. My advice to those folks who have an issue with that is to jump on YouTube and play some Enya. Okay? Relax. I enjoyed the Battle Royal up until the finish. Not because I had a problem with them doing a disputed finish either. I think some people misunderstood my tweet when I said they should have called an audible. My issue was not with that. My issue was with how bad it looked and how obvious it was that they did not hit the floor at the same time. But otherwise, I thought it was a good Battle Royal. And I enjoyed the Falls Count Anywhere match too. Wasn't the best edition of SmackDown, but to tear other people down for liking it, it's like, you know, crack a window open, take a walk, have a drink, take the edge off, and chill out. There are weeks where SmackDown gets over 90% thumbs up, and there are weeks where it gets 70%. It goes up, it goes down. Up, up, down, down. It doesn't mean the majority of people are liking it just because it's not Raw. I mean, there are some people like that, but they're the minority. In case you haven't been paying attention, in the polls I've been doing, Raw has been in thumbs up territory for like the last 4 weeks straight, including this week. Not by as much as SmackDown, but it's had more thumbs up than thumbs down. Those people conveniently leave out that little fact because it doesn't fit their narrative. So, on this show, Naomi was forced to vacate the SmackDown Women's Championship due to a legit injury. It's an injury that she suffered on the split-legged moonsault that she used at Elimination Chamber to win the championship. She could be out for up to 2 months, which means that she may miss WrestleMania in her hometown, which sucks for her. What all of this meant was Daniel Bryan made a match between the former champion Alexa Bliss and Becky Lynch to crown a brand new SmackDown Women's Champion. The match was a dud. Becky took most of it before Alexa punched her in the throat and then rolled her up with a handful of trunks for the win. Finish just came out of nowhere. And just like that, Alexa Bliss is a two-time SmackDown Women's Champion. And so we're right back where we should have been. I'd have never taken the belt off her in the first place. And just saved whatever title change they were going to do for WrestleMania. So if they wanted to get that belt back on Naomi, or get the belt on Naomi in her hometown, fine, do it at WrestleMania. If they wanted to put the belt on Mickie James, fine, do it at WrestleMania. But don't take the championship off of Alexa now. I mean, she's been on a roll. So I hate what happened to Naomi. I feel bad for her, but the belt is back where it belongs. And now I guess we'll see if that shakes up plans for WrestleMania. I don't know what they're going to be doing. If it's going to be a multi-woman match, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. We have 4 weeks to find out. I like the way... And by the way, Alexa Bliss, they put a feature. They have this new feature on WWE's YouTube channel where they talk to the parents. They've done two of them already. I think they did one for Finn Balor. I didn't watch that one, but they did one for Alexa Bliss. And it's called, like, My Daughter is a WWE Superstar. It's like a 15-minute little mini-documentary. It's awesome. They did one for Alexa that... Now, the thing is, Alexa's supposed to be this evil heel, this evil vindictive heel on SmackDown, but you watch this thing and it's hard not to root for her. So, that's the only thing. But it's really, really well done. They talk about her background, they talk about the eating disorder that almost killed her, and her parents... Yeah, people were joking, but it's true. Her parents look like they could be her friends. So they must have had, I think they said they had her when maybe they were 17 or 18. They're very young, but it's very good. So if you haven't seen it, go on their YouTube channel and watch it. It's definitely worth taking 15 minutes to check out. I like the way that they... Now, I mentioned a battle royal. They did have a battle royal on the show to determine a new number one contender for Bray Wyatt's championship at WrestleMania because Randy Orton, who, of course, won the Royal Rumble, said, I'm not going to wrestle Bray. I'm not going to fight my family. And he has forfeited, essentially, his championship opportunity. And so they set up a battle royal on this show, and the winner would go on to Mania. I like the way they had the participants in the Battle Royal cutting promos backstage throughout the entire night. It's kind of what they used to do back in the day for the Royal Rumble, very old school. It was a nice little touch, although Dolph Ziggler super kicking the green screen was just lame. I'm also not sure, let me mention this, I'm not sure why The Undertaker didn't add himself to the Battle Royal, because he showed up on SmackDown a few months ago, before he ever showed up on Raw. He cared enough to enter the Royal Rumble match, because he wanted to go to the main event of WrestleMania, so why the hell wouldn't he have thrown his name in the hat for this thing? Kalisto was in there, but not The Undertaker. Now granted, Undertaker looked awful, he looked terrible at the Royal Rumble. But, logically, he should have at least wanted to be in this thing. Now imagine, if you will, Undertaker is in the Battle Royal. He eliminates AJ Styles at the end. And then with his back turned or whatever, Luke Harper dumps out The Undertaker. Luke Harper wins the Royal Rumble. Yeah, right. Luke Harper wins the Battle Royal. So he goes on and they do the whole thing with him and Orton and Bray at Mania. And we get AJ Styles and The Undertaker at WrestleMania. They still had a chance. They still had that chance. Because I would much rather see that than The Undertaker against Roman Reigns. There's been a lot of rumors about AJ Styles lately. I don't know that I would buy into it. I do still think the plan is AJ and Shane. And I imagine that this week coming up will probably be pushed more in that direction. But there was a Twitter back and forth between Nakamura and AJ where Nakamura basically said, hey, you don't have a match. I'd love to come and wrestle you at WrestleMania. And that got people pretty excited. I mean, these two guys had arguably the match of the year last year at Wrestle Kingdom. So to see them do their thing at WrestleMania would be pretty badass. I mean, I would expect AJ and Nakamura to have a match at some point in the next couple of years. But as far as WrestleMania this year, I would love to see it. Absolutely. But I don't think it's going to happen. Falls Count Anywhere, Nikki Bella and Natalya. I like matches where guys brawl all over the building and into the back. We don't see it a lot, and so when they do it, I generally think it's a lot of fun. They did something similar with Sami Zayn and Braun Strowman a while back. The stipulation made sense here because this is a feud that's been going on for a while now. So they brawled into the crowd. They did a spot where Nikki came off this raised platform or one of those the big giant cases or whatever. Leveled Natty with a kick to the head. The camera then pans down right in front of Natty's face. And we suddenly hear her say the words, good job. Right there on camera is Natalya telling her opponent, good job. Followed by Nikki Bella doing her best John Cena impression. And calling her next spot for all the world to hear. But the Natty thing is, that's the one that bothered me. It's like, you've got cameras fixed right on you. Do you have to say that? Really? It'd be like Peter Weller getting his hand blown off in RoboCop by the dad from That 70s Show. And then whispering, nice shot, to him right on camera in the middle of the scene. But I guess you could say the same for Samoa Joe and Seth Rollins when Rollins got hurt, right? Joe's like, oh, are you okay? And Rollins is like, I hope so. That at least I understand because he thought the guy was hurt. He thought he was injured. He wanted to know if he was all right so he didn't hurt him any worse. Complimenting your opponent on kicking your ass in the middle of the match, that's a little much. So Nikki threw her over the barricade and back to ringside and I knew this already because Nikki was like Babe Ruth out there calling her shot before she even did it. Natty went to give Nikki a power bump through the announce table, but Nikki punched her way out of it, and Nikki gave Natty an Alabama slam on the table, which, they only did this one time on Raw. Once, I'm pretty sure. Okay? One time on Raw almost 20 years ago. And this had to be a Russo idea. This reeks of Russo. But every time I see somebody use that move, I still, even though it was only one time, I cannot think of that without not thinking of the Holly Cost name that they gave to that move. That was the name they gave Bob Holly's finish before it became the Alabama Slam. The Holly Cost. Anyway, back from break, Natty gave Nikki a suplex on the ramp. They brawled backstage. Natty shoved Nikki into Maryse, who just so happened to be walking by, and Maryse got knocked into this giant curtain and everything fell down, and Nikki then smashed Natty's head through a mirror. for 7 years of bad luck, or as Dolph Ziggler calls it probably when he's playing the video game, my career mode. Nikki went for a pin, but Natty kicked out. If only Dolph had done the same. They brawled back out into the arena. Natty ends up getting Nikki in the sharpshooter in the aisle. Nikki turns it into an STF. And Natty's out there just about ready to tap when out comes Maryse, carrying what appears to be a pipe. She proceeded to hit Nikki with this pipe, and I'm being generous when I say that, because she was whiffing so badly with it, I'm surprised she didn't blow her a cold. Miz ran down to restrain his wife and drag her to the back, and Natty was able to cover Nikki and get the pin. I'd say that all of this was leading to Cena and Nikki against Miz and Maryse at Mania, with Natty in Miz and Maryse's corner, only for like Brie Bella to make a big surprise return and take out Natty outside the ring. But I guess Brie is with child right now, and so that's not possible. I don't know what Natty does at WrestleMania. You know, she beat Nikki here. She won the feud, seemingly. So for Nikki to get a match at WrestleMania and not her would be quite the kick in the crotch, unless she's getting a championship match. I mean, I guess if they do a multi-woman match, Natty could be in line for a title shot. It wouldn't be one-on-one against Alexa. You're not going to do heel versus heel, but, you know, I don't know. Maybe they'll do a six-pack challenge and they'll have Alexa and Naomi if she's ready to come back, and Carmella and Natty and Becky and Mickey. I mean, I could see that. I could see that. So despite the issues I had with this match, it was not a perfect match. Again, Natty, you know, telling Nikki good job, and then those ridiculous pipe shots from Maryse there at the end, kind of took it down a few notches. But I still thought it was, you know, again, as a brawl goes, I would much rather have seen that than just see Nikki and Natty in the ring one-on-one. You know, you got to add a little something to it. These women are supposed to hate each other. They should want to grab chairs and weapons and stuff and bash each other's brains in. This is supposed to be a deeply personal feud. This is a grudge. That's exactly the kind of match they should be having. American Alpha had a match. I was going to write down who their opponents were, and I didn't. I think they beat the Fashion Police. But they won, and out come the Usos, who walk out from the crowd. In fact, they stayed in the crowd. They cut their promo from the crowd. The Usos cut probably the best promo, not even probably, the Usos cut the best promo of their entire career. This was awesome. This was awesome. And again, it's just evidence of what can happen. The Usos were so just bland, nothing going on. We had seen everything from these guys. They were kind of boring. Not their matches so much, but just they had nothing going on. And a simple heel turn, just like that, an attitude change. And these guys, I find them far more interesting now than I have in years. And this promo, I thought, was just fantastic. I don't even remember everything they said. I just remember when it was over, I'm like, wow. I was impressed. I was very impressed. And now I'm kind of pumped. I mean, I was pumped anyway. I mean, look, we knew it was going to be American Alpha and the Usos as the next program. And we know they're going to have great matches. But if we can get great promos out of it, too, all the better. So I thought they did an incredible job here. 10-man number one contenders battle royal was our main event to determine who meets Bray Wyatt for the WWE Championship at WrestleMania after Randy Orton decided, who needs the Royal Rumble anyway? John Cena, AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, Baron Corbin, Luke Harper, The Miz, Dolph Ziggler, Apollo Crews, Kalisto, and Mojo Rawley. Because when I think of who should be getting a WWE Championship match in the main event of WrestleMania, I think of Mojo Rawley. Ambrose went right after Corbin, right at the very start, and just like that, we were underway. Everybody got a chance to shine in this thing, even if just for a minute or two. The eliminations went exactly, like if I had to make a list, if I had to put all the names down on a piece of paper and make a list of who I thought should and would be eliminated first, and then second, third, fourth, and so on, I think the order would have matched exactly what they did here. Mojo was the first person out, Corbin tossed him. Kalisto ran wild for a little bit. He was the next one gone. Super kicked off the apron by Dolph. Apollo Crews got revenge for his friend by eliminating Dolph and then knocked him off the apron with a kick. So now Ziggler's gone. This pissed off Ziggler, who went and grabbed a chair. He went to go use it on Kalisto. And Crews saw this, turned his back, and Baron Corbin promptly dumped him out of the ring. So now we're down to Cena, AJ, Ambrose, Harper, Corbin, and Miz. And there was a big flurry here where everybody hit their move, everybody was laid out, except for The Miz. He hit everybody with the corner drop kick, the Daniel Bryan corner drop kicks, and the Daniel Bryan yes kicks. Poorly, but he hit them. Cena ducked the final kick and then tossed Miz out of the ring, and at that point you knew exactly what was coming next. Cena delivered a double German to Styles and Ambrose, because he's a freak. Corbin laid out Cena with the End of Days. Ambrose then eliminated Corbin. Corbin was pissed. He reached in. He dragged Ambrose out of the ring, but he dragged him out under the bottom rope. So Ambrose was not eliminated, but he did lay him out on the floor with the End of Days. It was here that Miz jumped back into the ring. I was just waiting for it. He jumped back into the ring and he eliminated John Cena. And Cena was in shock. He got back in the ring, but the referee swarmed him and told him, "You're gone, go to the back." And so off to the back goes the 16-time champion, relegated to tag team duty at this year's WrestleMania. Coming off a year where he didn't even have a match at WrestleMania. He'll be the guest on Miz TV this week, by the way. Final three were AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, and Luke Harper. All three guys somehow ended up out on the apron, which is not the place you want to be in a battle royal. You think they'd know this by now. And each of them had already gone out over the top, so they were only one wrong step away from being eliminated here. I think Harper kicked Ambrose in here somewhere, and Ambrose fell to the floor. So now it's down to AJ Styles and Luke Harper. And it was very weird, because the crowd was pretty into this match up until this point. Once it came down to these two, the crowd got real quiet, because I don't know that they knew who they wanted to see win. I mean, the fans were behind AJ, but he's the heel. And there were definitely fans behind Harper, but I think it was kind of even. And maybe they just didn't know how to react, and so it got real quiet for a few minutes. Because it's not as though, again, it's not as though they're not into AJ. They were chanting AJ Styles all night long. So they ended up on the apron. AJ was sort of draped over the ropes in the corner, laying on his belly. Harper is on the other side. He's yanking him down, almost in like a suplex position. He's trying to yank him down by the head. And finally, AJ, just his body flips over, and he hits the floor. And Harper falls, but Harper sort of rolled off the ring steps before he hit the floor. It was painfully obvious that AJ's feet hit first. But they did the whole disputed finish deal. They claimed, oh, they hit it. What happened? What happened? They hit at the same time. And the referees are just like, oh, I don't know. They hit at the same time. It was so insulting. That was my issue with this. It wasn't doing the disputed finish. Of course, you're going to do a disputed finish. You'll get another week or two out of it on TV. That's fine. But this was so insulting. And Daniel Bryan comes out. He calls it a draw. Harper then lays out Styles with the discus clothesline. He poses to end the show. People are chanting Luke as they went off the air, which was kind of cool. Again, I don't mind the idea of the disputed finish, but for God, I mean, even though I think it's probably been done too much to really be believable at this point, it's just how blatantly obvious it was that AJ's feet hit the floor first. And then having the referees play dumb and having the announcers play dumb. I love how WWE shows 5,000 replays on every single show. If a guy sneezed, they would show you the snot flying through the air in slow motion, and yet not one replay for the finish of this match. And there are still people who think, oh, it was supposed to happen that way. No, it wasn't. If it were me, I'd have called an audible on that one. You could still have AJ Styles, you know, get up in Shane McMahon's face the next week and say, I got screwed, I want a match with Harper. Look, however you want to drag this thing out, they're doing AJ and Luke in a singles match this week. So I guess they felt they had to just do things the way they did. It's not a big deal. But they don't realize, like, when people watch this stuff, it's things like that. It is a big deal. Because you're just, when things are that blatant, that's why I have a lot of respect for Big Show. You know, Big Show had that match with Braun Strowman on Raw. And look, I don't know. I'm just assuming here. But Braun had a lot of trouble picking him up. And he had a really just awful looking power slam. And I that was going to be the finish of the match. I have no doubt about it. Big Show had enough sense to kick out. Because he said that just looked like shit. We can't end the match that way. He called an audible, and then they went to the planned finish. Now, that's a little bit different. If you call an audible here and have Luke win, you've got to now find a different way to get to Harper and Styles the week after. It makes their job a little tougher. But so what? It would have been the right thing to do. Now, obviously, Harper is going to win this match this week, and we'll see what they do to set up Shane and AJ for WrestleMania. You know, I was thinking about that match. Shane's crazy. He's nuts. He's got a screw loose up there, and he's going to want to do some crazy stuff. But one thing I hope he does not do is take the Styles Clash. They may tease it, and that's fine. I don't want to see him taking that move. If he does, I pray that this guy tucks his head. AJ, he's better off not even using that move on him because it's a dangerous enough move to use on a wrestler. Using it on a non-wrestler who has no experience taking it just sounds like a disaster waiting to happen. So for all the crazy stuff we may end up seeing in that match, I hope that move isn't one of them. Speaking of AJ, I gotta mention this. Daniel Bryan on Talking Smack said that AJ Styles legitimately thinks that the Earth may be flat. He called him a flat Earth truther. And AJ's like, I'm not a flat Earth truther, but you know, there's stuff out there. Like, he's sitting right next to him when he said this. And I thought it was just a joke when Bryan first mentioned it. I thought he was just, like, teasing him. But apparently not. AJ said, you know, there are things I've read. There are things I've read. There are things out there, he said. Yes, dumb things. There are lots of dumb things out there. There's also people who believe that lizard people exist, okay? Or that Josh Matthews is actually a great announcer. Do not listen to these people. Holy crap, I couldn't believe it when I heard that. Speaking of dumb things, this would be a good time to bring up poor Tom Phillips. WWE may want to find someone else to sit in that social media lounge they do for all their pay-per-views, or at least have someone supervising him. I'd like to know what else is going on in that lounge. So let me preface this by saying we don't know if this is completely legit or not, though he has since taken all of his social media accounts private, which is weird that he would do that if this was all just some elaborate hoax. Seems that our friend Tom, the fourth wheel on the SmackDown announce team, who is supposedly engaged to be married, again, I don't know that to be fact, I'm just going by what's being said here, but it appears he may have been sexting with someone who is not, in fact, his fiancé. And once the other girl found out about that, she decided to expose him to the world. And thankfully, this was not a Seth Rollins situation. There are no dick pics that have been leaked, at least not yet. But they were pretty explicit messages nonetheless. They are not messages that you would want to be leaked to the world. And I'm not going to read them. You can find them easily enough on your own if you're interested. I'll just say, he talks about little Tom standing at attention on his flight, and about little Tom's plan to desecrate this woman's face. The woman who leaked the stuff, which includes a selfie that Tom took of himself sitting on a airplane on his flight with a dumb look on his face. This is what she said. This is the message she posted with all of the other texts. She said, "This is why I don't trust people. Without my friends, I never would have known that a high-profile WWE commentator who was talking to me and wanted to get together is engaged. Yes, I knew who he was. We talked for a while and actually liked each other. He texted me every day. When he first DM'd me, I was really happy. And I'm genuinely hurt to find out that there was anyone else when he said he was single." Well, he was single-ish. You know how that goes. Anyway, she continues, "I had zero idea and could not be any more sorry to the girl involved. You deserve better than this. Apparently nobody is faithful anymore." So for everyone thinking that, you know, his career is over, they're going to fire him, you know, his career may end prematurely as a result of this. Look, I don't know if he was using a company phone for this. I suppose if he was, that could be a fireable offense. Otherwise, I see nothing here worth firing him for. I think it's all much ado about nothing. If he is engaged to be married and he did do this, then he's a moron. And he's a moron for this reason. I'm not going to sit here and pass judgment, but I will say this. He's a moron for this reason. How the hell have these people not figured out that this is a bad idea? When you are a public figure, when you are someone who is in the public eye, when you are on television every single week, you are putting yourself at risk for this kind of stuff. If you're going back to the hotel, you know, they used to call them the rats, the ring rats, right? If you're going back to your hotel and you're hooking up with five different women, you know what? Good for you. But guess what? If you're married or you got somebody at home and you're screwing around and one of the women gets really pissed off at you and she goes and she calls your house and talks to your wife or talks to your girlfriend and spills the beans on what's going on, then you get what you deserve. If you're going to play around like that, you're going to play games, that's the risk you take. Now, it's one thing if you're a single guy, but if you're engaged or if you're married, always operate under the assumption that if it can go wrong, it will go wrong. And that's what happened to poor Tom. And it's a hard situation for him to be in. It all came to a head, you might say. The guy is embarrassed. You know, he took all of his stuff private. Perhaps now his engagement may be in jeopardy as a result of this. Who knows? I see no reason to fire the guy. It's a crappy thing. It goes both ways. It's a crappy thing to have done to you, to have your private messages leaked for all the world to see. But don't be stupid. It's always a good rule to follow. Don't be stupid.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Spoiler alert on the Drifter, for those of you who care. The Drifter has drifted right on out of NXT. At the latest set of tapings, Elias Samson lost a loser leaves NXT match to Cassius Ohno. And all I can say is, Drifter, we hardly knew you. Godspeed, my friend. So we've now had two matches with talent from the UK tournament 2 weeks in a row here on NXT, and they're already my new favorite thing about NXT. It's actually a shame that they're all fighting for this UK championship when they should be competing for the NXT championship. I mean, they should just be normal, regular members of this brand, and they could be the top of the heap. Last week, Tyler Bate and Trent Seven had an excellent match. This week, we got to see the NXT debuts of Mark Andrews and Pete Dunne. Pete Dunne is probably my new favorite. He's like a young William Regal reborn, but with a mouth guard. And his hair is not quite as nice. I think he could be the top heel, not just of these UK guys. He could be the top heel on that entire brand inside of a year, if they play their cards right. Nigel McGuinness mentioned that the very first match of Dunn's career, possibly of both of their careers, was against each other. And so these two have a history together. I love the way Dunn picks his opponent apart in these matches, the way he kind of bends the fingers. He tries to separate them away from their hand. I like it when I watch someone in the ring and actually cringe, and not cringe because they suck, but because it really does look like they're torturing their opponents in there. So they had a match. I mean, they didn't open the show with this, but I'm going to talk about this match first. Andrews hit a nice springboard out of the ring, turned it into an arm drag. A lot of really cool stuff here at the beginning of this match. Well, he went for the springboard again out of the ring. He went to the well one too many times, and this time Dunn moved. Andrews landed on his feet, but Dunn caught him with a roaring elbow, or at least it looked like an elbow. Maybe he just straight up punched the guy in the face. But whatever it was, it made a loud thwack, and I thought that he knocked the guy out. Back in the ring, Dunn gave him an X-plex, which is basically just a rolling release suplex for a near fall. Story from here on out was Dunn trying multiple times to hit his bitter end finish. The bitter end is his finish, which is the pump handle into the flatliner. But Andrews would just find different ways to counter each and every single time. Dunn tried another X-plex later on. Andrews turned it into a Hurricane Rana for a near fall. Yet another try at the bitter end by Dunn, but Andrews turned it into a cradle for a near fall. Then he hit his Stun Dog Millionaire move, which is a comically bad name for that move, let me just say. He rushed to the top, he went for the Shooting Star Press, but Dunn got his knees up, and then finally hit the bitter end in the pin. This was a great match, and I love the idea of continuing the rivalry, if they want to do this, between Pete Dunne and William Regal. Because if they do, then that must mean we're in for some really dastardly things from Pete Dunne going forward, which is A-okay in my book. I think we're only scratching the surface. I mean, this is his first match on NXT. We haven't even seen what this guy, like, heel-wise, what he's capable of. They did shake hands when the match was over, and Dunn did not lay him out, which surprised me. Best match, though, that I saw all week Although I did not watch 205 Live, so I can't say it was the best. It may have been, but it was the best that I saw. They also had a triple threat match with Ember Moon, Liv Morgan, and Peyton Royce to determine who would face Asuka for the NXT Women's Championship next week. Liv Morgan did some stuff early in the match that I thought looked pretty impressive. Some roll-throughs and some pin attempts, that sort of thing. It looked good. And then it was all downhill after that, when she started throwing punches and... Yeah. Ember Moon spent much of the match outside the ring. Every time she tried to get back in, she'd get kicked off the apron. So Ember Moon spent, I would say, a good three quarters of this match laying on the floor outside the ring. Peyton Royce was on offense for most of this. They had a new referee out there. I noticed that. I don't remember seeing him before. He walked right in front of Peyton Royce at one point as she was coming off the ropes, which is a no-no. He'll get used to it. Big spot of the match was Royce going to give Liv Morgan a superplex in the corner, and Ember Moon flew in from the outside for a sunset suplex, as Nigel called it. A sunset flip into a superplex on Liv Morgan. That was cool. Ember Moon went for her top rope stunner, which she calls the Eclipse. When Billy Kay ran in, Billy Kay, of course, was out there with Peyton Royce. Ember Moon gave her the stunner instead, but then Liv Morgan threw Ember back out to the floor yet again. And then turned around right into a knee to the face, followed by the perfect plex by Peyton Royce for the pin. Peyton Royce will challenge Asuka, or as William Regal would say, Asuka, for the championship this Wednesday. Aside from that one cool spot, though, this really was not anything special. Next week, DIY will get their rematch against the Authors of Pain for the tag team titles. And we also learned that Patrick Clark will be in action. Oh, joy. Main event was Bobby Roode against No Way Jose. If we ever get to see Bobby Roode against The Undertaker, perhaps one time at a WrestleMania, the entrances will last longer than the match itself. This was amazing how long it took this guy to get down to the ring. I actually thought this was pretty boring, I gotta tell you. Maybe it was the fact that they had just come off that awesome Pete Dunne-Mark Andrews match. It really wasn't fair to put this match on right after that. Roode came off the middle rope. Jose clocked him with the wind-up punch. Okay, Roode fell out of the ring. Sucks for Jose, because now he's got to go out and get him and put him back in the ring. And when he comes back inside to follow him back in, Roode caught him with the glorious DDT and got the pin. So Bobby Roode goes to leave. Then he turns. He sees Jose's getting back up. So he goes back down to the ring. He took out his knee with a chop block, put him in the single-leg crab that he used on Nakamura in their match at TakeOver. So who should come to the rescue but Cassius Ohno, making his return to Full Sail University. Roode grabbed his belt. He bailed up the ramp. He grabbed a mic. He said to Ohno, "Who the hell do you think you are?" He should have said Chris Hero. And Ohno said he's got some unfinished business here in NXT. He wants the NXT championship. Bobby Roode then surprisingly said, "Okay, I'll defend the title against you right here, right now." Then, unsurprisingly, once he got in the ring, he took out Ohno's knee, went to take off his sport coat. Ohno's sport coat, that is. He was trying to get it off. That's when he got attacked. So, Roode worked over the knee for a little bit before Ohno kicked him away. He went on offense. And somehow, in the middle of all this, Cassius Ohno's sneaker came off. So, he picked up his sneaker. He threw it at Roode to a big pop. It's like George Bush at an Iraqi press conference. And then he knocked Roode out of the ring. So it's interesting how they're seemingly setting up Ohno right out of the gate for a feud with the NXT champion, but Nakamura is still owed his rematch. So perhaps they will set up a three-way, maybe for the next TakeOver show in Orlando. I didn't read through all the spoilers from the most recent tapings. You know, people spoiled the Drifter thing for me because they were so excited. Oh, Solomonster, you'll be so happy to know the Drifter is gone. So they kind of tweeted it to me. So I don't know if they've already gone ahead and set things up for the main event to take over, if it's a singles match, if it's a three-way, I have no idea. And I'd rather just wait and find out anyway. But a three-way to me would certainly make a lot of sense. I looked it up, you know, when Cassius Ohno was last on NXT, I wanted to know, how long has it been? I think I felt like it was 3 or 4 years, and it's been about that long. His last NXT in-ring appearance... Now, he was released from the company on November 8th, 2013. But But he was still making appearances on NXT television for another month after that. Remember, it was like Dead Man Walking. It was weird. We knew he was already gone. He was already cut. But he was still on TV for like another 3 or 4 weeks. In fact, he even won one of those matches. He beat Tyler Breeze. Tyler Breeze may be one of the few, if only, people in the history of that company to be beaten by somebody who's already been fired. But his final appearance on NXT television was December 11th, 2013. That's how far back it goes for Cassius Ohno. He was crushed by Alexander Rusev on that show in 3.5 minutes. Also on that show, I thought it'd be kind of fun just to really quickly go through what else was going on that show back in 2013. The Ascension retained their NXT tag team titles over Hunico and Camacho. Bayley and Natalya lost to Summer Rae and Sasha Banks, the BFFs. Mojo Rawley beat Scott Dawson. Ah, yes, the days where Scott Dawson wasn't just a mechanic in the ring, he actually looked like a mechanic. He was on the road to nowhere before he finally hooked up with Dash Wilder. And in the main event, Leo Kruger beat Sami Zayn. Very interesting to see who's around still and who is not. Ohno, it's safe to say that Ohno would have definitely been on the main roster by now, but doing what is the question. Now, I know CM Punk wanted him to be part of the Shield or whatever they would have called it. He wanted him to be part of that group that was coming in, and they went with Roman Reigns instead. But that was a year before he ended up getting released from the company. What he would have been doing on the main roster by now, honestly, I think he'd probably be teaming with Cesaro. I think at the end of the day, those two guys, they had a history together. They worked really well together. Cesaro, Vince just will not take a chance on this guy as a single star. He will not give him the chance. And so Cesaro is stuck in this tag team now with Sheamus and whatever. I think that's just how Vince looks at Cesaro. He looks at him as a tag team guy and nothing more. So figuring he would be in a tag team, I don't think he'd be in a tag team with Sheamus. I think him and Hiro would be a tag team. They would be doing the whole Kings of Wrestling thing on the main roster, whatever they would call themselves. And honestly, that's probably what both those guys would be doing. I mean, it's impossible to know exactly how things would have panned out if he would have been a main eventer or anything like that. But I'd be down. I'd still be down for a Kings of Wrestling reunion at some point. Okay. So with that, it is time for the unboxing. Yay. Okay. Let's get this over here. I have a crate sitting here from ProWrestlingCrate.com. They have set up a special code exclusively for members of the Sound Off family here. Listeners of the Sound Off, if you use the code SOLOMONSTER, you get 20% off any crate, $24.95 or higher, for your first month. They have 5 plans to choose from, and that coupon code will only work for the original, the tag team, or the triple threat crates, so just be aware of that. You choose a membership plan, whichever one works for you, and boom, that's it. They mail you a new crate each month. But again, SOLOMONSTER is the code. It's 20% off just for the first month on any crate priced $24.95 and above. So if you want to take advantage of that, definitely go ahead and do that. I'm going to open this thing here. I already cut the tape earlier, so I just have to lift the lid as I open this up here. All right, so we have a card here. Called High Flyers. High Flyer, that's apparently the theme. Each crate, by the way, each month has a different theme. So I guess the theme for this month is High Flyers. Spoiler alert, the other side of this card contains the contents of this crate. Well, the hell with that, I don't want you to spoil it for me. Put that down there. And the very first thing we have, This is cool. This is cool. It is a Randy Savage shirt. Macho Man Randy Savage. A dark purple Macho Man Randy Savage shirt. It's got an illustrated design of the Macho Man on it. This is very cool. This is very... Now, let me make sure it fits me here. Size large. Perfect. We're off to a good start here. I think I like this better than my other Macho Man shirt that I have. Well, this one's coming with me to Orlando, that's for sure. So we'll put that on the side. That's a good way to start this thing. All right, so we have a Mustafa Ali. What is this? CD? Looks like a CD. A DVD, I guess. DVD. Freelance Wrestling presents Mustafa Ali, the complete collection. So Mustafa Ali, of course, now part of the Cruiserweight division. I do love that inverted 450 that he does. I don't know if I'll ever watch this, but we'll hold on to that. What is this? Oh my god. It is a Vanguard 1 Frisbee. I think it's a Frisbee. It's either a Frisbee or something you put your drink down. It's a Frisbee. Okay. It's a Vanguard 1 Frisbee. It says, powered by the Seven Deities, Cameron, North Carolina. Yeah, that's what it is. I hope TNA, you know, I hope TNA is selling stuff like this, because they're idiots if they're not taking advantage of all the broken Matt merch they could be moving. Unless Matt was smart enough to just kind of say, look, I'm selling my own stuff. But WWE also, man, they would be absolutely crazy not to pick this guy up. They could make a killing off stuff like this. Speaking of the Hardys, we have an exclusive collector's pin with a Jeff Hardy logo. Jeff Hardy logo pin. That's pretty cool. Put that over there. We have a... Oh, God. Ugh. We have a This Is Awesome clapper. That almost sounds as annoying as the actual This Is Awesome chant. Put that over there. Oh, this is nice. We have a Ricky the Dragon Steamboat mini pennant. It's like the one that, one of those team banners you buy when you go to a baseball game. Pontiac Silverdome, March 29, 1987. Winner, the greatest match of all time. Not bad. Not bad. We have a postcard in here signed by Psychosis. And it is a picture of him coming off the top rope onto Rey Mysterio in what looks like ECW back in the day. Rey looks very young there in that photo. Could be Mexico. And here we have... Is this it? No, there's two more things. We have here a poster. Let's unfold this thing. See what it is. Let's see. Match of the Year 2016 poster. Ricochet against Will Ospreay. Cork and Hall, Block 6, Night 6. No, Block B, Night 6. Excuse me. New Japan Pro Wrestling Best of the Super Juniors. That was a pretty incredible match, if it's the one I'm thinking of. Pissed off all the fans, though, who hate all that flippy stuff they do. They're very sensitive. Don't you ever notice that? All those anti-flippy people, they're the ones that'll complain about things being too PC and all that, but they're the ones that actually protest the loudest when it comes to stuff like that. Boy, do they bitch a lot about that stuff. They can't stand that flippy stuff. It's hilarious how batty it drives them. And the final, put that over there, the final item here, it's a giant envelope. Let's open this bad boy up, see what's in here. Last but not least, we have a 8x10 autographed photo of Rob Van Dam. And he signed it 5-star with an actual star and the initials RD. I don't know who RD is. Rob Dam, I guess. Well, that's very cool. No, that's a pretty cool crate. The Macho Man shirt is definitely the best part. Let me take a look at that spoiler card here. See what the listing is. They had everything. Yeah, they have everything listed on the back of the card. Everything that you get in the crate, it's all listed right here. This month's charity, a portion of this month's sales has been donated to Perry Saturn to help with his medical care. It's very nice. So I take it a portion of the proceeds go to a different charity each month. look at this. So they have different t-shirts, I guess. It depends on the kind of crate. They have 3 different potential t-shirts that you could be getting for this month. And they have them listed here. And for this month, it was either Macho Man, Matt Sydal, or Superfly Jimmy Snuka. Can you imagine me getting the Snuka shirt? What a rib that would have been. We'd have a nice big Superfly bonfire. I could roast marshmallows and broadcast it on Facebook Live. But no, this was very cool. I would recommend it. If you're a wrestling fan, which you clearly are if you're listening to this podcast, and you like having a box of mystery items shipped right to your doorstep every month, then this is the thing for you. So go to ProWrestlingCrate.com. Use the code SOLOMONSTER. It's exclusive for our listeners. Use the code SOLOMONSTER on any crate, $24.95 and above. Get yourself 20% off your first month. And if you do sign up, tweet me a photo after you do. I'll retweet you. And let me know what you get in your crate. I'll tweet out some photos of this stuff when I'm done recording. I'll take some pictures. I'll post them up on Twitter. But thank you to the folks over at Pro Wrestling Crate for sending this to me. Some assorted quick notes here before we get to your mailbag questions. Quick Netflix update. If you're a Lucha Underground fan or a would-be Lucha Underground fan, CNET.com posted a list of everything coming to Netflix in the month of March. And Lucha Underground seasons 1 and 2 are listed as being due to arrive on March 15th. So that is the arrival date for Lucha Underground season 1 and 2 on Netflix. March 15th, it will finally happen. And finally, here's one more dumb story, as if the Tom Phillips stuff wasn't dumb enough. Dumb story of the week. For this, we go to Florida. I'll be in Florida in a few weeks, so I don't want to be too harsh, but it's Florida. I blame the sun. I think it just fries people's brains down there. Let me read this here. A Poinciana middle school is downplaying safety concerns after reports of a student who brought a kill list to class, though some parents aren't taking the allegations lightly. Michelle Spangler's 14-year-old twins attend Renaissance Charter School in Poinciana. She says, "I made a decision not to send my kids to school the next day because I personally did not feel safe. I still today do not feel safe." Spangler was alarmed. By the way, am I the only one who thinks of Ghostbusters when I hear that name? Egon Spengler. Anyway, she heard one of her kids tell her that a kid wrote a list and it includes most of the kids on the football team and he wants to shoot them, Spangler said, and I'm like, oh my god. So now someone's going to take that and put that in a, what is it? Was it Usher? Was it Usher or Jamie Foxx? Who the hell sung that song? Oh my god. I can't remember. I think of the weirdest shit when I'm doing this show. Just ignore me. The sheriff's office incident report said the deputies contacted the student who created the list. According to the report, the family claims the boy got the idea from watching World Wrestling Entertainment and mimicking pro wrestler Chris Jericho, whose gimmick is that he keeps the list, a list of people he dislikes. The family said the boy had no intention, though, of harming anyone. So everybody's freaking out now because they think that this is going to be the end of the list on WWE television. It isn't. This will not change a thing. The list is one of the most, it's one of the most PG gimmicks that you can find anywhere right now on WWE television. I mean, what the hell are they supposed to do? Well, they're not going to do anything. I mean, this whole thing is ridiculous. It would be like some kid taking a ready, willing, and gable towel to school and smothering his classmate with it, and then blaming American Alpha for the kid's death. You know, or like some little kid taking Bray Wyatt literally when he says, "Follow the buzzards," and then getting hit by a bus. I mean, there's only so much that they can do without completely watering things down. If anything, it just shows how over the gimmick is. Chris Jericho should be very happy. He's got one of the most famous lists of all time. I mean, he's up there with Schindler and Santa. I mean, that's how popular Jericho has become. So let's get to your mailbag questions now. You can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Oh, I forgot to mention one more thing. WWE Network turned 3 years old this week. February 24, 2014 is when the network launched. They have added a lot of new stuff since then. I want to hear from you guys. What is the thing that you like the most about the network? And what is one thing, I'm sure you could come up with a whole list, but only one, that you wish they would add? I personally still think the network is a steal for what you get for the price. But if there's one thing I wish they would do, I wish they would get around to adding episodes of Superstars and Wrestling Challenge, the syndicated shows from back in the day, right from the very beginning. I want them to start adding those. I expect that they will at some point. I just don't know when. I mean, that and also the old Coliseum home video releases, I feel like that should have its own devoted section somewhere on the network. You know, and I get that the classic stuff doesn't get nearly the same numbers as the newer stuff does, but I want them to start doing that. Otherwise, I think the network's been great. Their Windows 10 app sucks. It's terrible. I just use my Chrome browser to watch stuff if I'm watching on the laptop. If I'm not on my phone or on the TV, I'll just watch in the browser on my computer. But I had to stop using the app a while back because it crashed constantly. I mean, I would open it, it would crash, I would reopen it, it would crash, I would reopen it, it would be okay, and then 5 minutes later it would crash, and I'm like, enough of this shit. I'm not gonna put up with this anymore. Otherwise, I have very few, if any, issues when I use my browser, or if I'm using the Roku on the TV. The network is pretty much stable for me, and again, I think it's a good deal, but I wanna hear from you guys what you think. Yorick from the Netherlands. Do you think when Goldberg beats Kevin Owens for the Universal Championship that it would be a good idea for him to have an open challenge for the title every Raw between Fastlane and WrestleMania? You would get the most out of him, and Goldberg does not lose the championship in his very first title defense, assuming that he does in fact lose to Brock at WrestleMania. I wouldn't do that. I think the quickest way to make Goldberg not special anymore is to have him on television every week, wrestling. Not to mention, you know, look, Goldberg coming back to have a match every now and then is fine, and he goes into this intense training for it. I feel like if Goldberg wins the championship, you've got those few weeks, 4 weeks or whatever it is before WrestleMania, boy, are you tempting fate every single time you put that guy in the ring. And the last thing you can afford, they can ill afford for him to go down with an injury before WrestleMania. So I think that's just a bad move. I would not put him in the ring every single week for the next, whatever it is, 4 weeks. And also, you know, you mentioned an open challenge. It's like, who's he going to defend against? You know, Roman Reigns should be the first person to come out. Braun Strowman should be the first person to come out. But they would be crazy to give those matches away. Especially because I don't think Goldberg is wrestling his last match at WrestleMania. I see no reason to not keep him around after the show and let him do a pay-per-view here, a pay-per-view there. And you could do those big matches later on. You could get a big match out of Goldberg at SummerSlam. Why are you going to blow it off on Raw? Now, what I would do, I would try to get him, for example, they have a Madison Square Garden show in a few weeks. I think it's a Raw house show. Get him on that show. Let him defend the championship on that show. Sell more tickets. Add him as a special attraction. Maybe there's another house show in a major market. I think the MSG show is probably enough. That I think would be okay. The one thing I will say, I mean, the more I think about this, I would not have him wrestling on Raw every single week, but if he does win the championship at Fastlane, then that means Kevin Owens is going to be owed a rematch. So how do you reconcile that? When does Kevin Owens then get his rematch? I think it would be smart to do that match on Raw. I think it would be smart to take, let's say, 2 weeks and promote it and say, hey, we're going to have a rare Universal title defense on Raw, a rare Goldberg match on free TV, and build to Goldberg against Kevin Owens on Raw in like mid-March for the championship. That I think would be okay. Pop a big number out of it. They don't have to go for very long. Brock, I'm sure, would run in, interfere. Maybe Jericho would as well. That I think would be fine. Plus you're building to WrestleMania by doing that. But to have him in the ring every single week, just randomly defending the championship, I just don't think that's a good idea. Michael from Durham, England. With the Intercontinental title scene seemingly setting up for a Dean Ambrose-Baron Corbin match at WrestleMania, and assuming Chris Jericho keeps the U.S. title going into his match with Kevin Owens, what do you see being the multi-man match at WrestleMania this year having as its prize? One idea that I had would be to bring back Money in the Bank for a shot at the Universal title, because SmackDown has Money in the Bank for itself as a pay-per-view this year. Well, I mean, they already have a multi-man match on this card. It's called the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. I don't think we need to have another one. If anything, it would probably be something with the Cruiserweights anyway. I don't think you need to assign another prize. I mean, the Andre winner gets the trophy. Why can't it just be the Battle Royal? Daryl from Windsor, Ontario, wanted to get your thoughts on Renee Young in general, and if you believe she has the potential at the end of her career to be compared to Mean Jean Okerlund. Well, she'd have to lose some more hair on her head if she wanted to be compared to Mean Jean. He says, I've had the ability to watch her from the beginning, from the Aftermath show in Canada to NXT and now WWE. Her growth has been phenomenal, and she has been a lot of fun to watch. Renee is awesome. There's no doubt about it. I think that the path for her in the future is probably in ESPN or something. I think that they'll probably end up snatching her away in the next few years from WWE. So I'm not convinced she'll be around long enough to even get to that point. But I mean, compared to Mean Gene, I mean, it's like, come on now. You know, it's like, I think people actually underrate how good Mean Gene was at his job. I've seen him interviewing guys who were absolutely awful on the microphone. They would lose their train of thought. They would start stumbling over their words. And Gene always knew how to salvage it and get things back on track. Or he would start leading them. Like, wait, you mean this? Or you're talking about that? And the other person would be like, yeah, that's what I meant. Like, that sort of thing. You know, other times he would be angry or disgusted with someone if they had just done something really dastardly. He would do those pay-per-view previews and make everything seem like a big deal. I did also enjoy those occasions when he would start corpsing on camera. One of the funniest ones, I don't remember what the promo was about, but it was him and Ken Patera. And Patera started stumbling over his words. And Mean Gene, he had to like turn away from the camera. He looked like he was about to burst. He did that with Paul Orndorff once too, although I think Orndorff might have been trying to get him to laugh. Of course, the famous Ric Flair promo after he won the 1992 Royal Rumble. Put that cigarette out! Did we ever get an answer about what that was all about? Has he ever talked about that? I don't remember. But you know, for our anniversary one year, I think it was our anniversary, one of my listeners got Mean Gene to do a special shout out to the podcast. And it was one of the coolest things for me to hear in all the years I've been doing this show.
Hi gang, Mean Gene Orkelin, back in business again. Hey, little news coming up here. We've got some celebrating to do. Congratulations to my very dear, close, personal, longtime friend, Jason Solomon. 400th episode of a little number called, get this, Solomonster Sounds Off. It's a podcast. This guy started the podcast back in 2007, Royal Rumble, favorite one, 1992. I heartily agree. A huge Bobby Heenan fan, how about me? 28 years with the guy. We went to lunch at La Bretagne, a nice French restaurant, heart, kidney, liver, you name it, every body organ in the world. And Bobby Heenan said, they don't need a maitre d', they need a coroner. Well, that's the brain for you. 400th episode on 9/13. Congratulations, Sonomaster. Sounds off. Hooray for everybody.
Dylan from La Crosse, Wisconsin. Do you think WWE ignoring TNA is only legitimizing them? They don't mention them at all, but they have taken much of their top talent like Sting, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, and Eric Young. Well, don't forget Bobby Roode and Austin Aries. I wouldn't count Sting in there, though. I mean, he was a made man long before he ever set foot in TNA. But yeah, I agree. I think WWE has done more to legitimize TNA without even uttering their initials, just by bringing in all of their talent. And look at where they are now. I mean, now on the one hand, TNA should be proud of that. On the other hand, they should be ashamed. They should be ashamed that they had all of that great talent and they squandered it. And they let them get away. Joe and AJ specifically. To allow that to happen is inexcusable. Howard from New York. Which wrestler today could benefit from a Bob Backlund long title reign? In WWE, none of them. I think that would be the worst thing you could do, especially if you're a babyface. Unless your plan is to do like a slow burn heel turn and then turn have the people turn against that person, then maybe it would work. But giving anybody a 6-year title reign or a 4-year title reign like Hogan had, it's an asinine idea. It's completely asinine. It wouldn't work. Riley from California, who in your opinion is John Cena's greatest rival? CM Punk. Orlando from Philadelphia, is Vicky Guerrero worthy of the WWE Hall of Fame? Absolutely. Of course she is. Absolutely. She spent many years with the company. She was a big part of their television. She had more heat than most of the guys did for much of her run. I mean, we could just forget about Eric Escobar. We could put him on the side. she was very successful in her role. Unexpectedly so. I don't think that many people expected her to end up lasting as long as she did and being as successful as she was. And that's what makes it such a great story. Absolutely, she deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, and she will be. Amay from Mumbai, India. Which WWE star do you consider to be Mr. SummerSlam? Mr. SummerSlam. Well, you know, if Shawn Michaels is Mr. WrestleMania, then to me, Bret Hart would be Mr. SummerSlam. I think the quality of the matches that he had is pretty damn impressive. Hart Foundation had great matches with Brainbusters and Demolition. He won his first Intercontinental title from Mr. Perfect on that show at Madison Square Garden. Obviously, the classic match at Wembley Stadium with the British Bulldog. Let's see. In 93, he had the match with Lawler, but he had to wrestle Doink first. So he wrestled two matches on that show, and I remember the Doink match actually being pretty good. Then Lawler hit him with a crutch because he was faking an injury. And then they ended up having a normal match, and again, that Bret Hart-Jerry Lawler feud had just kicked off a couple of months before, and it was pretty, you know, it was pretty intense stuff. Those two guys hated each other and made for good television, not in real life, but, you know, the feud and Lawler mocking Bret's parents and his family and all that kind of stuff. So I thought the matches that Bret had in 93 at SummerSlam were not, you know, all-time great classics or anything like that, but they were pretty good. 94 was an all-time classic. 94 was the cage match against Owen for the championship, and in my opinion, it's the greatest cage match in WWE history. I'm not talking Hell in a Cell. I'm not talking Elimination Chamber. I'm talking straight-up steel cage match one-on-one. I think that is certainly one of the best, if not the best. That match in 94 was just tremendous. 95 was a throwaway show. He wrestled Dental Kane. 96, he was away on sabbatical. 97 was his last one. No, that's not his last one. 97 was the last one of his first run. And he won the championship from The Undertaker on that show. And we all know what that led to. I guess it was 2010 he wrestled, right? He was part of that whole 10-man tag against the Nexus. But you look at his body of work, and I think it's Bret. I think Bret would be Mr. SummerSlam. Although, I will say, you know, Brock Lesnar would be a close number two. I mean, he's had some pretty big SummerSlams. Plus, he beat the snot out of John Cena and Randy Orton. Two different SummerSlam shows. I mean, he destroyed John Cena one year, and then he destroyed Randy Orton last year. Not too many people can say that they did that. Thoroughly demolished those two guys the way that Brock did. He did that at SummerSlam. So I think Brock's got to be in the conversation too. Connor from Middlesbrough, England. I did some research about past WWE champions, and as I looked through the men who became champion, Bob Backlund won the title and held it for 2,000 plus days. However, I came up with Antonio Inoki's name on that list, and it shows that he beat Backlund for the title at a house show in Japan in 1979, but vacated it 6 days later, and it was back on Backlund for the second time. However, WWE does not acknowledge this as his second reign. The mystery to me is that WWE does not recognize Inoki as a former WWE champion. What was the point for doing the change? How come they don't acknowledge it in some other championship reigns and days held with the title? See, my question would be this. I don't know offhand. I know they put Inoki in the Hall of Fame. I don't remember them mentioning that Phantom title run for Inoki. So it's possible even when he went into their own Hall of Fame, I don't know that they mentioned that. They really should. I mean, it is weird. They really should. But they did that back in those days. I mean, they would go to another country. The local star would win the belt. They'd get a big reaction. And then they would drop it back to the champion the next day or a few days later. And it would be like it never even happened. It would never even be acknowledged. They did that in the NWA too. It was just a lot easier to get away with stuff like that when you did not have the internet back then. And people ask me sometimes, they'll be like, well, why do you refer to Ric Flair's 16 world titles as his fake record? Because it is. That's why I do that. It's his fake record. He dropped the belt and got it back a bunch of other times. He's actually like a 21 or 22 time champion, not 16. Flair has admitted this himself, but they don't acknowledge them for whatever reason. They said, okay, 16 is going to be our number. And it's just some number they picked. I mean, look what happened with Flair and Jack Veneno in the Dominican Republic. And I remember that story because I had George Napolitano on my podcast. You can go back and listen to the whole story on episode 182 when I interviewed him. You know, he was there in the Dominican Republic with Flair. Flair called an audible and let the guy beat him because he was worried that he wouldn't make it out of there alive. But there's yet another one right there. There's another reign that's not really ever acknowledged. Not, at least not here, not officially. In the Dominican Republic, it made Vanino into a hero. In fact, I think there's a movie on his life coming out this year. I'll have to check IMDb after, but I'm pretty sure I read something about a Jack Vanino movie coming out. Adam from the UK, I was watching Spring Stampede 1998. While watching the world title match between Sting and Scott Hall, it got me thinking, how come Scott Hall never won a world title? He was a member of the Click in WWE and was one of the big money makers in WCW. I understand in the later part of his career he had addiction issues, but never understood why he never had the title early on in his career. Was there ever a plan in either company to give him a run with the world championship? Not to my knowledge. I don't think so. He had issues in WWE too, though, I think. Just, you know, not just WCW. So that may have had something to do with it. But really, I just think it wasn't the right time. They already had their guys in WWE. They had Bret Hart. They had Diesel. And they gave him that year-long run with the belt. And they had Shawn Michaels, who they were always grooming to put the championship on. So there really, if you think about it, there was no room for Razor Ramon. Razor Ramon was very popular. Razor Ramon was a very popular persona. And he was a big guy. He's like a legit 6'6", 6'7", or he was. So it's not like he was a small dude. It's a good question. I think he should have been the perfect prototype for what Vince McMahon would have seen in a world champion, but I really do think it just had to do with the fact that the pecking order on top was already full, and they had their champ and they had their future champs kind of lined up, and he just didn't fit into that mix. Merv from Lincoln, UK. I was going through my old emails and stumbled upon an email question I sent you way back in 2012. The question related to if you could envisage WWE holding a WrestleMania over here in the UK. Your reply was that you actually had a bet on this very subject with Noah Mark. You bet him a steakhouse dinner that WWE would not hold a WrestleMania in the UK, at least until WrestleMania 35. With WrestleMania 34 already announced for the Superdome in New Orleans in 2018, I guess that makes dinner on Noah. Do you believe a WrestleMania will still happen at a UK venue? And what's for dinner and where? I hear Peter Luger's is nice. Peter Luger's is very nice. That's actually not a bad option. Oh, believe me, I have not forgotten about our bet. Noah does owe me a steak dinner. I intend to cash in. I intend to get my steak dinner when I'm in Orlando this year. So if anybody has any good recommendations as to where that should be in the Orlando area, feel free to let me know. I am tempted to hold off until New Orleans next year just because the food in New Orleans is so freaking good. I had char-grilled oysters for the first time in my life when I was in New Orleans for WrestleMania a few years ago, and it was amazing. And I'm not like a big seafood guy. I mean, shrimp is fine, but I don't go, you know, cracking open lobsters and stuff like that. But the food down there was just amazing. So I'm kind of tempted to hold off a year, but I think Orlando will do just fine. I'm thinking a nice cut maybe of filet mignon. We'll see. We'll see what I'm in the mood for. But thank you. I have not forgotten about that. Hector from Los Angeles. Did MVP really lose his virginity at the age of 4 to his babysitter? Wow. This got awkward real quick. I have absolutely no idea. That is the first I've ever heard of that. I don't think I want to know. I think that's a question that probably is better well put to MVP. Phil from Chicago. Is this the Phil from Chicago? Because that would be kind of funny if it was. With it being almost an annual thing at WrestleMania, which athlete or actor have you been most impressed with when they have had to step in the ring and perform? I remember a few years ago being surprisingly impressed with Stephen Amell when he was in that match at SummerSlam. What say you about the best athlete or actor in-ring performance? Please do not say Kevin Federline. Well, hey, Kevin Federline, he is undefeated against John Cena, okay? That's pretty impressive. You got to admit that. Stephen Amell is a good choice. I thought he was pretty good. Mr. T did well enough. And also, I'll throw this name in there too. I mean, I don't want to rank them. These are all good names, but I'll throw one more name in there for you. Karl Malone in WCW. From what I can remember, he didn't embarrass himself. He was actually pretty good. Now, if I had to say most embarrassing, if I kind of flipped it and said most embarrassing, there's two names that come to mind immediately when I think most embarrassing would be Jay Leno and Steve-O from Jackass. I loved it when Umaga stiffed the shit out of Steve-O when he no-sold Umaga's big splash off the top rope. I think he started laughing, and that's what kind of set him off. He was laughing. I think there were two guys from Jackass doing the angle that night. Maybe he was laughing at his friend, and Umaga saw that, and you don't disrespect the guy's finish like that. Just put it that way. And I think Umaga made it very well known that night that you gotta show more respect than that. So, speaking of Umaga, I got two questions on him. This one is a buy or sell from Joseph from Las Vegas. Buy or sell, Umaga or Rusev? Both were big guys and were extremely agile in the ring. Also, both of their careers were impacted by a loss to John Cena. Who could have been a bigger main event draw, and did the hair versus hair match at WrestleMania hurt or help Umaga's career? Yeah, I mean, Umaga lost, what was it, that last man standing match, I think, at Royal Rumble to Cena, which was actually an excellent match. I don't know that it really impacted Umaga as much as the loss maybe impacted Rusev, because I think for Rusev, he was undefeated for so long, he was the U.S. champ. It was so pretty. I was saying for months and months and months and months that the end game here is John Cena. He's going to, what did I say? The exact quote, he's going to run into a brick wall named John Cena. It was so obvious from the beginning that it was designed for John Cena to be the All-American hero who wins the U.S. title and beats Rusev. And that's exactly what they did. And that's fine, because at some point, right, the evil Russian Bulgarian guy has to lose. And you just hope that when that time comes, they have other plans for him and he doesn't just sort of fade away. Rusev's been around a while now. Rusev is very entertaining. I've become a big Rusev fan, and I do think that he is being criminally underutilized right now. Rusev teaming with Jinder Mahal is really a gigantic waste. And I hope... I'm not sure that a babyface turn maybe wouldn't be the best idea for Rusev. I really do. I mean, I think he can make it work. He's a funny guy. He's a witty guy. He's a good wrestler. I think it would add some longevity onto his run there instead of just being the prototypical, stereotypical foreign heel. I mean, it can only work for so long. Umaga, I don't think, was as hurt by the loss to Cena because after that, he did get that big match at WrestleMania. You know... It's weird. I remember saying this at the time, not on the podcast, because I didn't start the podcast until later that year. But I've had other people ask me about that Battle of the Billionaires match, and who would you have put in there? I would not have put Umaga in that match. And it's not because I didn't like Umaga or think he wasn't a talented guy. I liked Umaga. Umaga was very talented. He had great matches with Jeff Hardy. Those are the matches that really, I think, kind of made me sit up and take notice of this guy. But... that whole Umaga character as part of the Battle of the Billionaires match with Vince and Trump, it just didn't work. It was something right out of the 1980s. Here's this savage guy who can't speak English, although later on he did. The big tattoo on his face. He may as well have had a bone through his nose. I mean, it was this just stereotypical, old school, corny WWF gimmick. Right out of something you would have seen from the Hogan days. You know, like they would have brought in somebody like Umaga to be knocked down by Hogan. And I thought that you needed something more realistic in that match. You had Vince McMahon and Donald Trump and Steve Austin. And here you take this cartoon character who is a good wrestler, but what the hell is he doing in that match? It just never fit. I never thought he was a good fit for that match. In terms of buying or selling, I'm going to buy on Rusev just because I think overall Rusev, Umaga was a good wrestler, so is Rusev, okay? I'll call it a wash. Well, what else do they have going for them? I never saw the same kind of charisma out of Umaga that we see out of Rusev, and I think part of it is just the character. I mean, how could we? He was the Samoan savage. He came down, he was like an animal. I mean, there's only so much you can do with that. Rusev, though, really, he's got a lot going for him. He's very versatile in that way. And in terms of main event potential, I think Rusev has more main event potential than Umaga did. I don't know that he'll ever get there. I don't know that he'll ever realize it. Umaga never did, obviously. But I think he's got more of that potential. So just in terms of the overall package as a performer, buy or sell, It's close, but I got to buy on Rusev and sell on Umaga. All right, let's do this week in Sound Off History, going down memory lane. What was I talking about back in the day as I sit here now, episode 484? What was going on when episode 84 dropped on October 11th, 2009? Well, I was talking about CM Punk having heat with The Undertaker for the way that he was dressed overseas on a European tour. This is back when CM Punk was the world champion on SmackDown. They had the dress code, and I guess Punk wasn't wearing the suit. Whatever he was wearing, it got back to The Undertaker, or The Undertaker saw him. It caused some problems. Ironically, this was right around the time that The Undertaker beat CM Punk for the championship. Episode 184 from October 11, 2011. This was the infamous Emergency Sound Off, where I absolutely tore Raw to shreds. The worst Raw of the year. So bad, I could not wait until the weekend, so I recorded it on a Tuesday. That may have been, like, legit, no joke, that may have been the angriest sound off I've ever recorded. So if that's your thing, if you kind of get off on that, then that's the episode to go back and listen to. Episode 284 from July 20th, 2013 was just the opposite. I talked about one of the best Raws of the year. I talked about the WWE mole. Remember the mole? Why he or she is not so noble as they think they are. Why Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman are the second best duo in WWE history. So if you want to know the first, you got to listen to the show. Talked about Ric Flair's daughter making her NXT debut. I wonder how that turned out. Chris Sabin won the TNA World Championship. I talked about that. The death of Bruiser Brody 25 years later. And perhaps the worst match in wrestling history. Again, you want to find out what it is, you got to go back and listen to 284. Finally, episode 384 from May 24, 2015, with the headline, Why TNA is Such an Embarrassment. So that gives you a sense of what to expect here. I broke down the entire story of Destination America opting not to renew Impact as of September of that year. Dixie Carter's botched email. Oh, this is a good one. This was a good episode. I talked about TNA's embarrassing response to the entire fiasco and the even more embarrassing response from some of their followers. All that, plus Samoa Joe makes his NXT debut and two winners for Sad Tweet that week, one of whom, ironically enough, was Josh Matthews. And I had a rebuttal to Josh Matthews on that show. I'm guessing that was probably his tweet to Jim Ross, but I could be wrong. Josh has tweeted a lot of stupid stuff, so it's anyone's guess. But you can stream or download past episodes of The Sound Off from thesolemnmonster.com or iTunes, and you can find the first 10 episodes ever of The Sound Off on our YouTube channel. So definitely check that out. I want to thank everybody for tuning in this week. You can follow me on Twitter at Solemnmonster. I'll be live tweeting during the Fastlane pay-per-view next Sunday. And definitely hit the subscribe button on the YouTube channel as more content goes up there in the weeks ahead. You can go on Facebook and RSVP to our meetup invite. We are hosting a meetup at Tin Roof Orlando on WrestleMania Sunday, April 2nd, 11:15 in the morning until 2:30 in the afternoon. I hope you can join us. Please let me know if you can. Pick up a Sound Off Orlando shirt in our Pro Wrestling Tee store. And that's going to do it for this week. I'll be back next weekend with episode 485. If I have any amendments or updates to my predictions for Fastlane, I will do them at that time. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week, and we'll see you back here for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemnmonster sounds off.
I'm just saying, I don't know, with New Day, you got three black guys out there. Why Francesca?
You want to call it Tyrone the Trombone?
Okay, that's racist.
Well, no, it's I'm just
racist. No,
I'm not racist. Go to Hulk Hogan for that. That's not me.
You know, usually the people that go, I'm not racist, that those are the racists.
Since 2007, The Solemnmonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolemnmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solemnmonster Sound Off.